Hi guys, as you already know, we are reading The Meaning of Happiness by Alan Watts. This is the second part of it. We continue. Something that I noticed yesterday, it's that some of you probably are not understanding the whole thing of the vocabulary. This is a very advanced vocabulary indeed. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to read it together, and I am going to write down some of the vocabulary that probably you don't know. I'm going to create an index, and with the index, then I'm going to send you the index so you can review the vocabulary on your own later, okay? Nice. So without further ado, let's get started. Second part, The Meaning of Happiness by Alan Watts. The fear of fear. This is a malady as old as life, born of what Kiserling calls original fear, whose outward aspect psychologists term the pleasure-pain principle. For as the snail and the tortoise withdraw into their shells, man retires into his castle of illusion. But it's curious that whereas the snail and the tortoise often come out of their shells, man hardly ever comes out of his castle, because he seems to have a much more acute sense of his personal identity, of his distinction from the rest of the universe. The greater the sense of distinction, the greater the tension between the two, and the more the pairs of opposites war together in the soul. This tension we call unhappiness, but it's not suggested that it will be overcome by the entrance to a bottomless abyss of self-deception and misery. Man does not like to admit to himself that he is afraid. For this weakness, his self-esteem and shakes his faith in the security of his ego. To accept fear would be like accepting death, so he runs from it. And this is the great unhappiness. Sometimes it is expressed in sheer unbridled. Right, all these words, guys, I'm sending to you. Unbridled terror. But more often, it is a half-concealed, walking anxiety, moving in vicious circles to an ever greater intensity. It would have been better to say, in the first place, I am afraid, but not ashamed. Therefore, in struggling with the opposites, man perpetually deceives himself. The prizes he tries to pluck away from life and keep solely for his personal use turn moldy because he has severed them from the roots, and nothing that is isolated can live. Since the two most important characteristics of life are circulation and change. On the other hand, the troubles which he tries to avoid are the only things which make him aware of his blessings. And if he would love the latter, he must fear the former. But he is afraid of fear. These two things make him respectively frustrated and worried, driving him more and more into an attitude of isolation, of separateness from a hostility toward the rest of life, standing huddled and miserable between the deep devil of circumstances and the deep sea of his own unpredictable and orderly emotions. And in this isolation, his spirit perishes. man is much attached to nature as a tree. Man and nature. Again, man is as much attached to nature as a tree. And though he walks freely on two legs and is not rooted in the soil, he is by no means a self-sufficient, self-moving, and self-directed entity. For his life, he depends absolutely on the same factors as the tree, the worm and the fly, on the universal powers of nature, life, God, or whatever it may be. From some mysterious source, life flows through him unceasingly. Unceasingly. It doesn't just go in at birth and come out of death. He is the channel for an ever-moving stream, a stream that carries the blood through his veins, that moves his lungs and brings him air to breathe, that raises his food from the earth and bears the light of the sun to his face. If we look into a single cell of his body, we find the universe. For sun, moon, and stars are ceaselessly maintaining it. We find it again if we plumb into the depths of his mind. For there are all the archaic urges of primeval life, both human and animal. And could we look deeper, we might find kinship with the plants and rocks. For man is a meeting place for the interplay of forces from all quarters of the universe, swept through him in a stream which is the power behind all his thoughts and actions, which is indeed more truly man's self than his body or mind, its instruments. This was known to almost all the ancient peoples of the world, whose sages thought that all the actions of man were as much expressions of nature, unceasing movement, as the sun and the winds. A fact that will be obvious to anyone not born and bred in a place where there are little more to see than human handwork. The isolation of the human soul from nature is, generally speaking, a phenomenon of civilization. The isolation of the human soul from nature is, generally speaking, a phenomenon of civilization. This isolation is more apparent than real, because the more nature is held back by brick, concrete, and machines, the more it reasserts itself in the human mind, usually as an unwanted, violent, and troublesome visitor. For actually, the creations of man, his art, his literature, his buildings, differ only in quality, not in kind. From such creations of nature as birds, nests, and honeycombs, man's creations are infinitely more numerous and ingenious, but this very ingenuity, together with his fear, aggravates his feeling of isolation, persuading him that he is a creator of his own right, separate from nature. For once again, it would go against his self-esteem to have to admit that his super-bee faculty of reason and all its works do not make him the master of nature, rather than its servant. Bewitched by his power of reason and urged on through fright of his fear, man seeks his freedom in isolation from and not union with nature, whose service is perfect freedom. Man's struggle for mastery is magnificent and tragic, but it doesn't work, and the difficulty is not so much in what he does as in what he thinks. If he were to seek union instead of isolation, this would not involve what is generally called getting back to nature. He would not have to give up his machines and cities and retire to the forest and live in nature. He would only have to change his attitude. For the penalties he pays for his isolation are only indirectly on the physical plane. They originate from and are most severe in his mind. So, what are these penalties? We give them the broad name of unhappiness, and though this is not something peculiar to civilization, civilization offers us an extreme case, especially in the world of today. Of course, it is not possible for us to know whether we are any less happy than savages, nor whether we suffer less. All men suffer, not as well as in ancient times, like when we had wars and everything, but not all are unhappy. For unhappiness is a reaction to suffering, not suffering itself. Repeating this again, unhappiness is a reaction to suffering, not suffering itself. Therefore, generally speaking, the primitive was unhappy from his conflict with the external forces of nature. But the unhappiness of civilized men is chiefly the result, right, of conflict with natural forces inside himself and inside human society. Forces that are all the more dangerous and violent because they come in unrecognized and unwanted at the back door. So taking a little look about what Alan Watts says here, he's talking about the fear of fear. Let's put an example first, okay, before we proceed to the next chapter. So he says first that the original fear are like the snail or the tortoise, right? The tortoise is like a turtle. So they go inside of a shelter to protect themselves. But they usually go out after the danger has gone away. However, usually human minds and humans go inside of their castle, but they don't go out. How is it this? Why does this happen? It says that the more a human is recognized with his identity, or the more he distinct himself from the universe, the more isolated he becomes. Therefore, some humans think that they're not part of something bigger. Let me give you an example. I challenge you to go today to the roof of your house or outside. Look at the top of the sky, like if you're looking in a vertical line, and make a twist, a complete round over your own point of rotation. And you will see how the world looks like a dome, like a complete dome. Even though your sight is limited because you can only see the mountains in front of you or the very horizon. However, it is a fact that you live in an entire world. You are part of this entire world. And what is more surprising is that you might think, okay, this is my life, but still, this planet is in a complete universe with more and more planets. So that is one of the biggest fears of humanity, looking at into himself or herself, right, and finding out all those secrets about life. So what humans do is that they rather isolate themselves from others, like playing video games, watching movies, right? Just staying at home. Don't be outside in nature, like he points out here. He says that the more we live in society, the more civilized we become, the more we lose our connection with nature. And then we tend to see nature as something dangerous, as something that we shouldn't go. As something that if I tell you to go to a mountain alone at night, you might think something might appear to you. Some kind of monster will appear right in front of you. But this is just because creation of mind telling us to stay away from our true self. So, as he says here, what are the penalties that humans have to pay with this? Well, they have to pay isolation, depression, loneliness, fear of unfulfillment with his life. People become violent, right? People start creating things that are not necessary for human survival. My question for you is, what do you think is fear? First, what do you think is fear? Then, why do you give so much importance to those things that you fear? And what are the things that you fear the most? Do you fear not having a job? Do you fear not being able to be happy? Because as we discovered before, happiness is not something that we find. Happiness is something that we, right, do in every moment. The more you look for happiness, the more it goes away, right? So what is the meaning of fear for you? How can you be fearless? How can you stay away from the fear of life? I challenge you. Go to the top of your roof. Go and see the entire world you live in, and you will discover the magnificent and tremendous miracle, which is to be alive. And then you will say, sure, wow. I am in this entire universe, in this entire world, and I'm in this tiny place. What can I do to be happy right now? Okay, guys, so that will be it for today. I'm going to leave it with some of the words I found, and I'm going to send you the index for you to look for those words on your own. Keep it up, and very, very nice, kids, okay? Right? Let's get it.